Tradition 7. Each partner ought to strive to be fully self-supporting spiritually, emotionally, and physically. Okay, the previous one says we don't overhelp one another. And this one says take care of yourself. Because sometimes we're so busy helping other people, we don't get us taken care of. You know, I've seen this year after year with people with their kids. They'll do everything and they don't take care of themselves. And they don't realize that the lesson they're teaching their kids is don't take care of yourself, take care of somebody else. Instead of take care of you, that's the better message. You know, when I was helping the others, I let my personal needs go. And I live through someone else. This is where you take your life back and it's care back and you become responsible for yourself. You know, it's nobody else's fault. You are the one who's responsible. You know, I had a thing about I could not be okay if I felt obligated. And if you did something for me, I was obligated. You know, I hadn't learned how to take care of myself there. And so my mother-in-law one weekend worked all day Saturday helping me put up purple hull peas in the freezer. And this was an ordeal all day long of shelling and blanching and putting them up. And at the end, she said, why don't we go join Mr. Clint and J.D. and Roger, and that was J.D.'s father and his brother, and they had gone fishing up in a little town called Searcy, Arkansas. And it was right below the dam. And I told myself, I do not want to do this. I don't want to do this, but how do I tell her no after she has helped me all day long? Now, you see, I'm not taking care of myself physically because I am whipped tired. Where that old lady got the energy, I will never know. You know, but it was fishing, and she was one of those. And, you know, fishing people have a thing, you know. They can fish whenever. And she says, I'll fry a chicken. And so here we are. It's a little after midnight. And we are heading up to meet them where they are camping. It starts to rain. I'm ready to go home. It's raining. Oh, no, she says. She says, it might not be raining where they are. The closer we got to Searcy, the harder the rain. I said, I think it's starting where they are, you know. And we get into the town of Searcy, and water is just flowing through the streets. They're having flash flooding in Searcy, you know. And here we are, and she's going, Georgia. And so we go outside the town and we make a left turn onto a red gumbo road. Now, gumbo is real slick when it's wet. And so the back end was meeting the front end of the car as I'm whipping down the road like this. And we get to this little narrow one-lane bridge. Water's running over the bridge. Never go through running water on a bridge. She says, I've done it 1,000 times. Oh, God, you know, now I have to, you know, you've been dared, you know, I've done it 1,000 times. So I started to cross and the bridge collapsed. So now we're going down into this creek that goes, and the creek course is out of the banks because of the flash flooding. We're in this fast moving water. Got out, the chicken is floating around in the back seat. My mother-in-law says, I can't swim. It's a fine time to tell me. Okay, I get out my window, I go around, help her, and I'm struggling, and I finally get her, and you know, going against water, rushing like that, it is very difficult. And I'm having this tremendous chest pain. Absolutely tremendous chest pain. I finally get her attached to a root over here on a tree at the bank. And I went there, and all of a sudden, you know what the problem is? This perch has swam into my bra. Because, you know, when you're sweat, you know how it gets this loose. And it had swum into my bra, and it was thinning me. That was the pain in my chest. I was being thinned to death by this berserk perch. Okay. Yeah, what?
She thought it was your purse.
No. No, perch, P-E-R-C-H, a fish, a fish. Fish had swum, little perch, about like this, had swum into my bra. Well, We get out over the other side. They're all drunk. The boat has sunk. Food is floating around in the tent. I mean, it's just ungodly over there. And so they get the pickup. They get the boat out. They work on it. They get everything put on the truck. And I'm thinking, where do they think they're going? There is no bridge. Where do they think they are going here? You know, they drive down. They said, well, looks like your car is going to have to come out some way it went in. I thought that. But help is on the other side. So JD and I, here we go. We get across to the other side because you're going to get so wet, you know. Get over there and we walk down that road because I had seen a house at the end of that road when I turned on. I noticed it in the lightning. And so we went over there and this big old German shepherd comes loping out. And I was mad. And so I kicked the dog and slapped him, told him, shut the hell up. And then I knocked on their door. And I said, open up in there. We need help. And he heard voices. Are you opening the door? No, I'm not opening the door. Are you opening the door? No, I'm not opening the door. Somebody open this door! You know, they wouldn't open the door. Now, we found out later that there were some escaped convicts in the area. God help them if I'd have seen them, you know. So we had to walk all the way back to town. Cersei did not have a phone booth. They had pay phones, but they were inside businesses. It's 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing open except the funeral home. So we go to the funeral home. And there we, the guy looks and says, can I help you? And I said, I just want to lay down. I just want to lay down. I'm so tired. I just want to lay down. And so we called JD's uncle who lives in another town up there who came back with a truck pulling a tractor to get us out of the creek. And his cousin says, did y'all know we've had more rain in the last 2 hours than we've ever had before? I said, no shit, Frank. Where do you think we've been the last 2 hours? My God, you know. It's like, you know, you just want to kill an old country boy sometimes. And so we got back over there and they worked and they worked and they cut some trees and stuff to get things to wedge under it so they could finally get a jerk on that tractor on that and get that out. And now the insanity goes more. His daddy says, of course, his daddy's been sitting there, JD, still drinking. You know, you get more booze while you're out, take back to the scene of the accident, you know. And he says, you know, Jim, I've been thinking. See, that's scary. If we get old Rhodey, that was the truck's name, if we get it just revved up, I believe we can come tearing down that little hill there and jump that creek. And I'm saying to myself, he's got to be kidding. And about that time I hear, rrr. Now we have the truck in the creek. 2 days this adventure went, getting everybody in and out of the creek. Is absolute, total insanity. You know, and I didn't have to be a part of that. That didn't have to happen. If I had taken care of myself and said, Virgie, I'm sorry, I can't go to the camp. I'm too tired. Too tired, you know. And as a result, like say, it was a nightmare. I had a big resentment for a long time. When I worked in the insurance field. And I was not in the insurance field. I was insurance. You know, that was my job. That was my identity. That's what I did. You know, I wasn't a person. And when I quit, it was like, I'm not worth anything anymore. I'm not getting a paycheck anymore. Therefore, I'm not worth anything anymore. You know, it took me a long time to make that adjustment to be okay. You have to know your capabilities as well as your limitations. You know, my first responsibility is to God and then to myself to be the best I can. Spiritually, emotionally, and physically. You know, for years, I blamed JD for money problems. The drinking, the fines, and all the stuff that goes with it. But the money problems were mine. I was the one that would say, he spends money we don't have. Well, so can I. When he quit drinking in a short period of time, there wasn't any money problems with JD. It took 10 years. To pay off my little rippy-doo-dahs to the mall. those times that I went to prove that I could spend money we didn't have to. Those kind of things. And to make you feel better. Those feel-good things. And then I would think, you know, okay, I can't afford to go to the doctor, but I could make appointments for J.D. to go to the doctor. I couldn't go to the dentist, but I could make J.D. go to the dentist. And the reason was, I was afraid. I had this terror of the dentist. You know, I was 26 years between visits. I'd say that would qualify for being a little afraid, you know. And fortunately, I had good teeth. You know, but there will come a point in time when I, like I say, when I lived in Newfoundland, my husband got in trouble with the military because we had to go to the base dentist. That was one of the requirements. There was no dentist in the town. And I kept canceling appointments. And finally, they told him that he would be in trouble if he didn't get me to the dentist. And I went there, and they had to give me sedative in the waiting room just to get me back there. I had gotten hurt when I was 9 years old. And that would be in my mind. And I'd go and just go into this just absolute panic when I think about going to the dentist. I just couldn't do it. And so they got me back there. And now here I was 26 years later. And that feeling that they gave me had fallen out. Funny thing about it is, would you believe the dentist that gave me the feeling is in our fellowship? I met him years later over in Georgia. It was funny. He's in the Al-Anon Fellowship. I knew he wasn't exciting enough to be an alcoholic. Anyway. Well, you know how they are, you know. Those kind of things. But the bottom line there was, I had to go. Now, here I am. I'm sitting in a hospital emergency room. My mother, they think, is having a heart attack. But my feeling fell out. What is the greater emergency here? My feeling. She can die. I've got to go to a dentist, you know. And then they finally came out and told me it wasn't a heart attack, but they were going to observe her overnight. And so I'm sitting there and I'm going, oh, my God, I've got to go. I've got to do something different. I've got to do something different because if you do what you've always done, you get what you've always got. I've always lost a tooth. Whenever I had a toothache, I would leave it alone. And after a while, you can't stand hot in your mouth. And after a while, you can't stand cold in your mouth. And then after a while, you can't stand your tongue in your mouth. You know, and then you have to, it either falls out or you got to go and you're going to lose the tooth. It's just that simple. And I didn't want to do that anymore. And so I said, God, what am I going to do? And so I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And the next thing you know, I opened up the phone book. And I said, God, help me find, you don't have a family dentist when you don't go. And I opened it up and there was a half page ad that said, we cater to cowards. And there I called the number and they said they'd take me right now. Now, can you believe that? Never having been, they're going to take you right now. When I told them I was 26 years between visits, I think they got the clue. But anyway, I went over there, and I was just terrified. I was just terrified about how that was going to go. But when I got there, there was a little arrow, and it says, we cater to cowards up the top of the stairs. And I ran up the stairs because I was debating going up the stairs or throwing myself into the freeway. Just, And so I went up there, and I got in there, and the woman looks at me, and she says, you must be Miss Thompson. I didn't have a clue. How'd she know? I mean, the fact I was pale and shaking had nothing, I'm sure. I could not fill out my thing. I was shaking so hard. And so I had to give it to her, because I told her, I said, I am so scared. And then they had music on, and the music was the local FM station. And then all of a sudden, I heard the voice of the DJ, and it was a girl who was my grandbaby in sponsorship. And that voice, when I heard Ann's voice, I began to calm down. And then when they took me back, and the last time I went, the dentist's office looked like a barber chair with a tarantula hanging over it. Well, I mean, that's what it looked like to me. And so when I sat down in this nice little chaise and they lean you back, there was these little panels on the ceiling, and they had a poster right over the one over my head. And it said, God, grant me the serenity. The serenity prayer right over my head. So see, God went ahead and planned in love each step of the way. And I was able to get over the fear. And I was able to take care of myself. To take care of my dental work. To take care of myself physically. You know? Now, I knew, in the fall of 99, I had been having problems for 6 months or more with my back. And I've been going to doctors, and they said it was first one thing, and then it was another thing, and then it was this. And then I had this rash, and they say it was shingles, and they say it was this, and they say it was that. But nothing was seemingly getting any better. And then this deal happened with my sister. And when Dorothy did the little crash in the car with me, it was, needless to say, it was very, very scary. But also, I had to do something to take care of me because I was really going to have to take care of her. And up to this point in my life, I hadn't had to take care of my sister, you know, like to make sure everything was right for her. I didn't know at this time she's in a coma. But when that happened, I started shaking and I couldn't quit shaking. Now, our HMO had changed when JD's job changed. And so we were going to have to find new doctors, and I hadn't done that yet. You know how you put all that stuff off. And so I just got the doctor that would be closest, and I called and made an appointment, and they took me that next afternoon because I couldn't quit shaking, and my sister's doctor said, you need to get seen. And I was in there with him just for a very few minutes, and he said, they ran an EKG, and they did some blood work, and they did all these other things, and he came back in, and he said, well, Miss Thompson, you are borderline diabetic. Well, see, I didn't want to hear the word diabetic because look at Dorothy. You know, I mean, this has just happened to Dorothy, you know. She's diabetic. And I'm going, oh, God, I don't want to be diabetic. And then he said, and you've got something wrong with your heart here, you know. And see, if that hadn't happened with Dorothy, I could have dropped dead somewhere never knowing that there was something wrong with me. And I told him about this pain in my back, and he said it was from the neuropathy. He said that was what the problem was. He says that's causing that pain back there for you. And so, you see, he found out in just a very few minutes what all these other doctors had been missing. So if I hadn't had to change doctors, we might never have found out what the problem was. And so he began to give me some medication for that, and in just a period of days, that pain went away. That pain all went away. And I kept on doing what they told me to do. You know, that's the important thing. It's just, it's just like the program. You got to keep on doing it. You know, it's working. You know, so many of us, it works. I don't think I'll do it. You know, it's working so well, let's don't do it anymore, you know. And I see people do that with other things too. This works. I'm tired of working it, you know. And I didn't want to do that. So I did exactly. And he told me to go to see a dietitian. And so I went to the dietitian, and I did exactly what she said. And as a result, in 8 months, I lost 100 pounds. I'm not diabetic anymore. I'm not even borderline diabetic anymore. And my blood pressure, I had been on high blood pressure medicine since I was 30. I no longer take blood pressure medicine. They had to start taking the prescription and making it less and less because I kept passing out on them. You know, I was being over-medicated. And my blood pressure, and it was really scary when you quit taking blood pressure medicine that you've taken for 28 years. You know, it's like you become emotionally dependent on taking that pill to make sure your blood pressure's okay. And then you're not taking it, and it scares you, like, am I going to be all right? Because I didn't want to have a stroke. That's what I saw Mama have, you know, those kind of things. But I did those things that they told me to do. And I did them exactly like they told me to do. And I've been the recipient of that. And so now I don't have to be on all that medication. I take vitamins and calcium and stuff now. And I take the little aspirin. I take one of my heart pills. But you know, the doctor told me the last time I was in to see my heart doctor, he says, you're doing a normal EKG. Well, that was good news to me because, see, I failed my stress test. I failed the nuclear stress test. And then they did the heart catheterization. And yes, I have blockage, but I don't have to have surgery immediately, you know. But I do have to watch what I eat because I don't want to finish clogging all that up, you know. So, but I'm doing what I need to do, and I found that preventive measures are best to try to work on things, you know, instead of having to try to find the horse after the gates open, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm responsible for my own self. And I'm responsible for my own spiritual condition, and I'm not going to live off of the serenity of others. I've seen people do that too. Try to live off the other person, their partner's program. Them not doing the deal, but and trying to get it by osmosis, you know. Like one partner quits going to meetings and the other one keeps going. And the one that quits going to meetings begins to try to feed off the other one's program. And that's real hard, you know. That's hard on both people. unfortunately, it can be very, very painful. Remember, there's no hope when you blame people, when you're into the blaming, because you're powerless over people. And if they're, what they're doing is the cause of your problems, you're just SOL. But if you are contributing to the problem, then you can do something about that. There's a lot of hope if you take responsibility. And I had a need to know why all the time. Even if you know why, what does it change? What does it change? You just know why. But it doesn't change anything. Father Hilary used to say, it doesn't matter how the horse got his ass in the mud. Get it out. You know, it's just not important, you know. And I am responsible for my own feelings. I choose how I want to feel. I choose how I want to be. Tradition 8. Our marriage or relationship should remain forever a free-giving relationship, one to the other. Now, I don't know about you, but I was a scorekeeper. I kept score when I did stuff, and I didn't know it. I had self-deception really bad. I thought I gave for free. I would tell you I was a real generous, giving person, but I had a hidden price tag that I didn't even know there was myself, and that was because I would compare. Comparisons are a form of scorekeeping. What I do compared to what someone else does for me, you know. Like, for instance, I'd say, it's your turn. I've done it the last 12 times, not that I'm counting. But you know how, it's real funny how that will come to your mind, you know. And we did this on just little dumb things like taking out the garbage, you know. It's your turn to take the garbage out. I took it out the last 16 times. You know, isn't that amazing? You know, or the clothes hamper, you know. It was like people who put their clothes in the clothes hamper. Who empties the clothes hamper? You know. The official clothes hamper emptier? I don't think so. They're not all my clothes, you know, that kind of thing. And I used to be real picky about all that because I wanted to make sure I didn't overdo anything. And so I overdid counting. You know, that was the deal. You know, I overcompensated. But, you know, it says just for today, do something you don't want to do just for discipline, as well as doing something without being found out. You know, there's that in our just for today. So that helped me with that scorekeeping. A lot of times I would do something for somebody and I would think it was a free gift, everything's great, and then something would come up where they had an opportunity to do something for me and they didn't. Here's when I called in the chip. Here's when, after all I've done for them, this is where you get to martyr, you know, and that's that scorekeeping I've done for them. But I've been freely given God's love and it's unconditional and God's acceptance. And I need to give that back. That I could be this way, free giving with, was with my sponsor. You know, she told me, she says, everything that, you know, I wanted to get her a real nice gift as appreciation. She said, absolutely not. You pass it on. You give it to someone else. She said, that's how this deal keeps going. Pass it on. And I remember that first big AA conference. The old granddad used to be in Hot Springs, and oh, it was great. People came in from all over everywhere, and when it was at the old Arlington Hotel. And here it was, J.D. had gotten sober, J.D. had gotten fired. I had had the sole financial responsibility of everything, and God, I felt so much pressure. And my sponsor said, are y'all going to the convention? I didn't know what a convention was. And I said, well, I don't guess so. I said, after all, you know, J.D. hadn't had a job for 6 months, and this is really hard times here. And she said, I just ask. And I said, well, I hadn't thought about it. And she said, well, you might want to pray about it. Well, I didn't know how to pray about things. I didn't know you could just pray about anything and everything, you know. And so I said, okay. So I went home, and I talked to him, and I said, do you want to go? He said, I don't know. I said, everybody says we ought to go. And he said, well, then maybe we ought to go. And I said, but we can't afford to go. And he said, well, then maybe we ought not to go. And I said, but my sponsor said to pray about it. And he said, okay. So I said, well, you want to pray with me? And he said, well, I can. And so he came in and we both got down on our knees by the side of the bed. And we said, God, if it's your will, we'd like to go to the convention, whatever it is, you know. Thank you very much. You know, wasn't real formal or nothing, just pretty simple. And the next day I went to the office and I used our Watts line and I called down to Hot Springs, took an action, made a reservation. 30 minutes later, J.D. called me back. He said, "You won't believe it. I got a job." I said, "You're kidding." He said, "No, I got a job today." And I said, "Well, that's great." He's been with that same company now almost 25 years. You know, well, except it's been bought out. But anyway, so now we're trying to save up money to go to the convention. Well, you know, we've got 6 months of back bills to take care of, and I didn't feel it was right to go to the convention on somebody else's money, like your bill, you know, your creditors. And so we were paying so much on the bills where we had just made minimums or less than minimums, but I had figured up what it would take for us to go to the convention if we had cheese and crackers in the room every day for meals. You know, something you could survive on. You might not like it by the time you got home, but, you know, you might never go to the bathroom again, but, you know, I mean, here, you could survive. And so we were wondering about all that, and I figured it up, and here it was, and J.D. came in one night, and he said, "I don't have anything to wear to a convention." Because J.D. smoked all the time, and when he smoked and he drank, he spilled his ashes. And this was the days of polyester. So he looked like a colander. You know, he had all these little holes burned all over his clothes, you know. And I said, "Oh, my God, well, I didn't realize that you could go to a convention in just normal clothes. You know, I thought you had to really dress up." And God, I wouldn't have asked, because then somebody would have known I didn't know. And couldn't have that. And so I said, "Well, I don't know if we can afford you a suit, because J.D., it's not in the budget." And, cause I was thinking $300 or $400 for a suit. And then we got this ad in the mail from a mail order place in Chicago, and it said that it had a suit that had a reversible vest, two pairs of pants, and a sport coat, the suit coat, all for $49.95, which was real cheap back then even. And I'm going, couldn't be much. But I kept thinking about it. And I thought, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained. You know, we could order it. If it doesn't work, send it back. So we ordered it and told him that, you know, he has a little bit of short legs, so you need to alter the pants, and send him all the information. Well, the week of the conference, I had just told him that day, I said, "J.D., I'm going to have to call and cancel our reservations, because we are $35 short of the bare minimum for the hotel room and the gas over there and the registration fee. We are short $35. And so that afternoon, the mailman brought the suit. And so J.D.'s trying it on. And he reached in into the pocket, and he said, "There's something wadded up in here." And he pulled out a 20, a 10, and a 5. And I would never have thought to tell God to do it like that. You know, that would have just been absolutely beyond anything. And so we just sat there on the floor and we cried. And we thanked God, you know. And so we went ahead and we went over there to the convention. And, you know, we didn't have to eat the cheese and crackers, because somebody invited us to lunch and somebody invited us to breakfast. And, you know, the fellowship will carry you. You know, they love you. And they knew we were trying really, really hard. And so it came the night of the banquet. And, of course, they had closed-circuit TV in the rooms, and they had a big TV in a room downstairs that if you didn't go to the banquet, you could sit in there and watch it on this big screen TV. And so we were feeling sorry for ourselves. You know how ungrateful we are. We were feeling sorry for ourselves. We were going to miss the banquet. We were going to eat that cheese and crackers after all. And we were sitting there and still thinking about all the good that had happened to us. You know, we're whining. And about that time, there was a knock at the door, and I went over to the door, and there wasn't anybody there. And I noticed something was under the door, and there was a little envelope, and there were two banquet tickets in the envelope. And we took those tickets, and we were seated with the speakers that night down at the banquet. We fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous that night. There was a speaker there. I don't know if how many of you had the opportunity to hear Jim Williams from Dallas. But Jim was fabulous. He was so funny. And we just fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous that night. And it's like we knew we were going to be convention junkies from then on, because that was so much fun. Just absolutely laughed till we cried. But you see, the people of Alcoholics Anonymous gave to us. And thank God, over the years, we've been able to pass that on, too, to other people who couldn't go and couldn't do. It's been real neat. When I felt obligated, I felt like you were in control and I was out of control. I didn't know how to just say thank you and let that be enough. Thank you. Did you know thank you is a complete sentence? Did you know the word no is a complete sentence? You know, you don't have to have a lot of explanations and stuff after it. And we had a little deal in our group one time about learning how to accept the gift graciously. When someone would give you a compliment, you know, someone would say, God, love your blouse, Carol. And Carol would say, this old thing, Kmart Blue Light Special, $3.99, you know, instead of just saying, thank you, you know. So we would do that to each other. We would run around and give each other compliments. We'd test one another to see if that would work, you know. Well, I had been wandering around, and I told J.D., I said, everybody tells me I need a computer, and see, it's so hard to make those changes, to go from, you know, I'm old, I can't do this, you know, that kind of thinking. And, cause when I left work, we had MTSTs. I mean, that was a big deal then, you know. But, anyway, I said, I wouldn't even know what kind of computer to get. I wouldn't have a clue what kind of computer to get. And so my sponsor said, well, you could pray about it and take an action. So prayed about it. And that August, we started a computer fund. And by Christmas, what we have in it, $30, you know, some massive amount. And years ago. And I'm thinking, you know, well, it's not important if you don't know because it's going to take a while to get there. And I was invited over to a girl that I sponsored at the time and her boyfriend. And they invited us to dinner. And after dinner, oh, and they still had their Christmas decorations up, and it was in January. I remember that because I remembered thinking, why has he still got his Christmas decorations up? And then when he said his mother had decorated his house, I really worried about him. You know, 30-some-odd years old, and your mother's decorating your house. But anyhow, not that I'm judgmental or critical. And he said, Santa Claus left something for you under the tree. And I said, he did. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what? And he gave me this box about this long and about this wide. And I opened it up, and it was a keyboard. And I said, oh, my God, it's like an add-a-pearl necklace. You get a keyboard now, you get a monitor sometime, you know. And he laughed. He said, no, we just didn't wrap it. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we're upgrading our computers at the office. And he said, we have downloaded everything that we need off of it, and we're letting you have the computer, the printer, you know, the whole schmear, you know. And I'm going, you're kidding. And he said, no. And I said, well, is it IBM compatible? Because, see, I knew that was important. I'd heard that. And he said, it's an IBM. I said, oh, I guess it doesn't have to be compatible then. Okay. And one of the other people that was there that night was a girl who worked for Systematics. And she said, I'll come over, set it up, and show you how to work your computer. And so whenever I'd have a question, I would call her, and she would tell me, and I'd write all my questions down, and I had a file. And so I wouldn't have to call her back and ask her the same thing twice, you know, because that's one thing I'd learned, too, in the program, is that when you ask a question, write it down so that you don't have to keep asking the same stuff over and over and over, you know, write down the answers. And so I began to do that, and I learned how to do it on the computer. Well, see, the amazing thing about that was, the gentleman who gave me the computer's last name was Grace. So by God's grace, I had a computer, you know. Now, you know, this, a lot of times people don't realize that in Al-Anon, our part of the family disease can be terminal also. Alcoholism is a very serious terminal illness. The girl married this gentleman. They both came to Al-Anon for a while. And then they got healed, as we sometimes people think they are, and they left. This past New Year's Eve, he shot her in the head, and he committed suicide. It is a fatal illness. Yeah. But she hadn't hit bottom yet. So we just pray for her. So pray for a girl named Sammy. The neat thing, too, is there's a gentleman that works for Rick, and he is a computer expert, whatever you call him. And I knew nothing about computers. Well, a few years later, I told J.D., I said, I need bigger, better, faster. You know how it is when you get a computer. You know, I said, I got to have a bigger, better, faster. I got to do something here. And that year, right before Christmas, I got a telephone call. And this guy said, I had made up my mind which one I was going to get. I had gone and looked at all of them. I had a little more idea, but see, mine didn't have Windows and mine didn't have internet ability, and I wanted that. And so I had gone and I checked out all these different things, and I had a pretty good idea of what I was going to get. And J.D. said, well, if you want that, go ahead and get it. I said, so much money. And he said, if you want it, get it. And so I prayed and I said, God, bless it or block it. And if I don't hear from you any different by tomorrow, I'm going to go down and get this one. Well, later that night, the phone rang, and this man said, is this Mary Pearl Thompson? I said, yes, it is. He says, well, this is Santa Claus. I said, okay. And he says, and I'm from South Dakota. And I said, I thought you were at the North Pole. And he said, no, I'm from Gateway in South Dakota. And I wanted to call you and let you know that a computer is being built for you. It's a state-of-the-art, the newest, fastest, anything that we have, and it's being sent to you. And he said, it won't be there in time for Christmas, but it is on its way. And I said, and who sent this? He said, some elves. And I said, would these elves have a name? And he said, they preferred to remain anonymous. And so I got my computer. I got my color printer. And everything that I'm using to this day, I love my computer, you know. And it's because God has put some very special people in our lives. You know, some very, very special people in our lives. And I am so grateful. But that's the thing. I never could have taken something like that before. I wouldn't have been worthy of it. I would have felt like I had to do something for somebody else because they did that. And how could you possibly do for someone else? And there's so many in this people who have been so giving for many, many years, giving and loving and kind and sharing. You know, it's just, it's amazing to me. But the gentleman that came to work on my computer and set it up, his name is Mike, and he's an earth person. And Mike is a computer nerd. He really is. He'll be the first to tell you that. You know, he doesn't deal well with people. He deals with machines. And I said, well, I deal well with people. I don't know jack about machines. And so Mike and I decided we would help one another. And so I give him lessons on people skills, and he gives me lessons on computer stuff. And it's worked out really well for us because it's real nice to be able to have somebody, a non-program person that you can depend on to pick up the phone and call at 3 o'clock in the morning and go, Mike, you know. And see, he's developed some people skills. He doesn't tell me where to go when I do that. You know what I mean? It's real, you know. I used to say all the time and still can sometimes, it's not fair. It's not fair. Be grateful life isn't fair. Because whatever you sow, you reap, but you don't get it necessarily from where you sow it, you know. Whatever goes out, what goes around comes around, you know. And you say, I've been so good, why is this happening? You know, that's like when this stuff with Dorothy went down, you know. I said, why is this happening? You know, what is going on? And then when I got sick and they were telling me all this bad news, it seemed like every time I went to the telephone, every time I went to a doctor, I got more bad news, bad news, bad news. And it's like, just send me to another planet. Put me away from here. I've had all the bad news I can stand. You know, life is going to keep happening to you. You know, we're not insulated here from reality. We're just not. But you know, I'm glad that I'm not a scorekeeper because in the long run, God has given me so much more. And there's a gentleman from Louisiana. He's a little Cajun guy named Joe. And Joe, he has a little prayer that he likes, and I like it too. And it says, thank you, God, for all you've given me. Thank you, God, for all you've taken away. Thank you, God, for all you've left me. You know, and that's true because there was a lot of things that were taken away, but I've also been very, very blessed. And I am very grateful for what I have, for what I have left. Self-worth used to be a lot from the outside sources for me, But today it's strictly from being that child of God. I don't have to do it because I've done this or that. And I know today that I'm entitled to the best that life has to offer. And when I look for the best, I get exactly what I need every time. You know, look to God to give you the best that's for you. And you'll get more than you have ever dreamed, you know. And when my self-worth was dependent on y'all, shame on me. Shame on me, not shame on you. You know, I looked for my mother to be that kind and loving mother all my life. And mother was to the best that she could be. But who was the kind and loving mother that I wanted all my life? Dorothy was. Dorothy was the kind and loving mother. And because she was my sister, I never acknowledged, I never put that together, that she was nurturing me and she was loving me just like the mother in my mind I wanted to have was doing. So I shorted mother because of it, and I never gave Dorothy credit for it. And I am so grateful that I was able to recognize that before all of this happened with Dorothy. And Carol and Dorothy and I have some really, really fun memories. My sister and I went to Hawaii many times. And we would visit with Carol, and we would go and have fun. It's like I told Carol the other night, one of my fun things is I have a mouse. Not a mouse. The computer. What's a little thing? Mouse pad. Thank you. When I think of a mouse pad, somehow my mind goes elsewhere. Anyway. Teeny pad. The mouse pad, I have a picture of Carol and Dorothy and I taken on the beautiful island of Maui where Carol lives. On one of our trips there. And I get to see Carol every day. And I get to see my sister the way she was, you know. I have my sister's body, but I don't have my sister anymore. But I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to provide for her the quality of care that I can. And that she has a quality of life. I had her in a nursing home, and they told me that she had come as far as she was going to come. And she was very disgruntled about being there, and she became very violent. Because she could recognize that she was different than most of the people there. Because she was ambulatory, she could go and do. She wasn't Alzheimer's forgetful. Hers was all of her short-term memory. You know, she's lost about 15 or so years right off the top. And then everything beyond that is scramble. She didn't remember mother's dying. She thinks her husband died a month ago. You know, and that happens. Like, you know, Dorothy will ask me today, was I in the hospital when mother died? And I'll say, no, Dorothy, that was 10 years ago. And she'll say, really? I don't remember. I wasn't there, was I? You know, and that's really, really sad. But, you know, realistically, anything that happens that she's unhappy about, she won't remember, you know. She won't remember tomorrow, the next day, or what have you. So that may be a blessing in some aspects, you know. But it's real difficult. It's real difficult. But Dorothy was that mother for me all those years. And as I understand it, as you get older, the older become younger, I just want to know who's going to take care of me, you know. And I've assigned that to Jennifer. She's got to take care of me. She's younger. Not much. You know, you've got to also know on this one here where it's scorekeeping that you've got to quit being a historian. You know, I was the Healy Street historian. I remembered everything that had ever been done wrong to me. That was the misuse of my memory. You know, I remembered every resentment, every slight, every this, every that. And that's what I used for that scorekeeping. That's how I remembered it. But I don't have to do that. And so I ask myself when I'm going to do something for somebody, can I do this for fun and for free? And if I can't, I don't. Because it's too much bother anymore. You know, it's just too much. And I learned from my mother's death a big lesson. My mother, like I say, was that very fearful person and who had done without so much of her life. She was afraid to let go of anything. I believe anything that I give away or let go of, if I need it again, God will bring it to me when I need it again. And I don't have to clutch on to it. I let my mother save rubber bands. Do you know what happens to rubber bands in Arkansas? Stick. They melt. We had rubber balls this big around. where the newspaper comes with a rubber band. She'd save the rubber bands off newspapers for 40-something years. You know, we had all these rubber balls where they'd all melted together. I mean, it was bizarre. She had every little butter dish that she had ever had. She had every milk carton and then milk jugs, you know, when milk came in the gun, then the jugs. We filled up an entire recycling center with the glass out of Mother's garage. She saved every olive bottle, every vinegar bottle, every pickle bottle, every glass jar that ever came in her house had been saved. You might need it again. And I thought, I will lose my mind. It took 3 months to go through this stuff because Mother was out of her mind that last year or so, and she would take stuff like she had fishing lures in the toes of her shoes. I mean, you had to be very careful when you were going through Mother's stuff because she put weird things, and then she would think that they had been stolen. Because, you see, they weren't in the right place. Bless her heart, her mind had just gone to mush. But, you know, that's the way it was with her. But I have learned, you know, that having to go through all of that, I don't want that. You can learn how to be or how not to be. And so I have a thing now. Something comes in, something goes out. Something comes in, something goes out. And then that way I don't have to live in clutter and I can pass it on. And that, you know, it's like I jokingly say, but it's also true with JD and I not having any children. You know, I have my children of the spirit that I sponsor. And it's like I like for them to take things that, you know, that they see that they like. I want you to take it and use it now and enjoy it. I'll pass it on because those are just things. And if you can enjoy them, you know, I'm given lots of things and I like to share them and I pass them on. I pass them on. I never want a thing to be as important as somebody. Of course, you know, some of the people I sponsor get a little weird when I say, I'd like for you to have this. And then they've been, oh, don't even talk about that. I said, but you never know. You never know. You just know. But I've learned that it's God's job to return things to me that I give. Now, this past year, I gave away everything I owned in the way of clothing. Literally. Because nothing fit anymore. When you change that many sizes and lose that much weight, nothing does. But you know, we have the neatest little thrift shop over at the Wolf Street Center. And then we've got Walmart. And then people, you know, people have been so generous to give me things. I am so blessed. And it's funny, you know, because now I can wear regular people's clothes. Something I never dreamed I'd ever be able to do. I was in the women's department from the time I was in high school on. You know, it never occurred to me that I could have regular people's clothes. And I would go to Dillard's. And I would go to the big women's department where I'd shopped all my life. And I would stand there and cry because they didn't have anything that fit me. And then they said, we have another department. Oh. You know, I mean, your mind just doesn't grasp that. And if you haven't gone through that, you don't understand that, I'm sure. But you just go where you've always gone. That's your habit, you know. And you go. And then I had a really dear, sweet girl tell me, come over. I've got some beautiful clothes. And I'm going to get to wear some of them on the cruise this week. You know, I have some really beautiful clothes. And she gave me something really super special, but I didn't bring it because I didn't want the people at the airport to go through my clothes and get it. I am now the proud owner of a beautiful mink jacket with a black fur collar, fox collar. You know, I never even dreamed of having a fur in my life, and now I have one. I feel really, really special and really, really blessed. You see, I've been given far more than I ever deserved. Far more. And it's because God is generous. I don't have to worry about keeping score. We'll finish tomorrow morning.